Of course, no one just gives you trust. You have to earn it every day. That's what John Beal's family has done for 65 years. A roofing company doesn't stay around long unless it does the customers right. So I'm proud to represent the John Beal family, and when you need help with your roof, call John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Dad, what are you doing in my cave?
I'm not Dad. I'm Safety Man.
Any parent can be a safety hero. It just takes a few simple steps. Start by replacing older smoke alarms with Kidde worry-free alarms. The 10-year sealed-in lithium battery means these alarms are always on. No low battery chirps and no battery replacement for 10 years. And Kidde makes it simple to choose the right alarm for the right location. Help make fire safety worry-free and give back the cape. Kidde worry-free alarms, available at the Home Depot.
I sit on the bank of the Hudson River, looking across at New York City. On sunny days, I shine. When it snows, I get very, very cold. I've never missed a day of work. I can honestly say that I carry the weight of the economy on my back. I am 1 mile of CSX railroad track. There are 21,000 more just like me. We're all here to keep things moving forward. CSX. How tomorrow moves.
Nominate a young volunteer aged 6 to 18 for the Kohl's Care Scholarship Program. Winners will receive up to $10,000 in scholarships.
Hi there, Frank Opinion, proud owner of a 2014 Corvette. What a car. Now, granted, that's not the car they sell the most of at any Chevy dealership, even Landoff. Most people in the market for a cruise. It's not a practical car for certainly if you have to haul kids around. But you know what? When you're an old guy like me and you're trying to relive a younger time and, and experience life on the edge every once in a while, but putting your foot into it, it's a great car. And here's the thing about Landoff and what sets them apart from other Chevy dealerships. The goal of most dealerships is to sell you a car. Car meaning truck, SUV. We'll call them all cars. That's their goal. That's not the goal at Landoff. Their goal is to make you a Johnny Landoff customer for life and everybody in your family. It's not just about one car. It's about a level of service and a competitive enough price and a good enough price that you will come back next time, whether the next time is next year or 2 years or 5 years or 7 years. They want it to be an experience that's so good you will tell your family, your friends, and you will certainly want to repeat it yourself. That's the goal of Johnny Landoff Chevrolet. Yes, I have in front of me a list of prices and, 2014 Chevy Cruises, $149 a month. These are lease deals, by the way. A 14 Malibu, $189 a month. Impala, $249. Equinox, $189. Traverse, $249. Silverado, $249. That's all well and good. These are 36-month leases, by the way, 12,000 miles a year, 3,000 down cash or trade. But the real reason is the service, the level of service. You can tell when they're doing business with you, they want you to come back. They want your business again. They want it forever. Johnny Landoff Chevrolet, where it's not just about selling you one vehicle, it's about giving you a level of service you can't wait to tell other people about. Washington Elizabeth exit off 270, Johnny Landoff Chevrolet or Landoff.com.
This is the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris filling in for Frank today and then back for my normal Friday thing tomorrow. Ian and Dan are here with me. And any classic rock aficionado knows that song, One Way Out by the Allman Brothers, which is the title of a brand new book about the band. It's the inside history of the Allman Brothers Band, and here's the guy who wrote it, Alan Paul. Alan, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Hey, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Dan and I are both huge Allman Brothers fans, and I know you have been because you've been writing about them and kind of going to their stuff, their concerts, for a quarter of a century, and I know that they have recently been playing the Beacon in New York, where every winter they do like two straight weeks of shows there.
Right. Well, this year it's gone almost 4 weeks. It goes about 14 shows from March 7th to 29th, and they've played four, and I've been to all four so far. And today is my day of rest. Thankfully, they're off tonight because I need a day of rest.
When they do these shows, are they marathon sessions?
No, they've calmed down a little bit, but they still end up going about 3.5 hours with about a 20-minute break in the middle.
That, that counts. 3.5 hours still counts as a marathon.
Yeah, I guess that's right. And you know, I don't. I live a little bit outside the city in New Jersey, so I got to get myself home. And, but 2 nights ago, I brought my 10-year-old daughter for the first time. I did leave at the break with her. I mean, had to have some, you know, still didn't get her to bed till 11 o'clock. But, you know, I thought she's given up her dad for the last 2 years, big chunks of time. So I thought I should let her see why, what it was all about.
How'd she like it?
She had a great time. I mean, I think the overall experience was great. People, you know, we didn't have tickets. We actually watched from the side of the stage, and we were guests of the great drummer, J-Mo, and he gave us seats right next to his drum kit and actually invited her up to sit and watch the show from his drum riser, which
was
cool. Yeah.
Very
so,
cool.
You know, he's never invited me up to his drum riser. I guess I'd be a little more conspicuous than a 10-year-old cute little girl. So.
Right. Did you take her because this might be the last time they ever tour?
Well, yeah, basically. You know, there'll be some more chances, at least for those of us in the Northeast. The Allman Brothers have concentrated more and more of their shows up in this part of the country rather than your part of the country in recent years. They're going to play a bunch of festivals over the summer, and they're going to announce some fall dates soon. I don't know exactly what they are, but suspect there'll be something back in this area. But the shows at the Beacon Theater are really special. There's just something unique about them. And, you know, everybody who's gone there, you know, knows that and agrees. And it's been a special place for me, not just for the music, but it's been such a big part of my life. I mean, I'm not a big counter. I sort of regret now that I don't know exactly how many Beacon shows I've been to. But when they are done with this, they will have played 236 straight sellout shows at the Beacon. And I've been to, I'm pushing close to 100. I'm somewhere over, you know, in the 60 to 80 range, as best as I can figure. So it's been a big part of my life. I've spent a lot of nights back there with the music and socially. I know all the people back there now, even the people, guys who work at the Beacon. So it's sort of strange for a lot of us to think about that not happening anymore.
And it might not happen because Warren Haynes and Derek Trucks, the two guitarists in the band now, they both announced that they're leaving, right?
Right. They've announced that at the end of this year. There's a lot of confusion about this, and it's in part because, you know, the band has been vague because I don't think, you know, the three founding members who will decide what exactly is going to happen are Greg Allman and the drummers Butch Trucks and J-Mo. Ultimately, it will be up to them to decide, and they haven't made an announcement about what they're going to do. So it's sown some confusion. They're not ending immediately after these Beacon shows. They have their own Wanee Festival down in April in Florida. They'll be playing a few nights there. They're playing at their Peach Festival in Pennsylvania in August and at the Lockin Festival in Virginia in September. They're playing at Mountain Jam in upstate New York in June. So there's a bunch more stuff coming up. And as I said, they're going to do things in September and October through the fall. But beyond that, we don't know, and at this point, it looks like the Beacon won't be happening next year. And, you know, it's been something, just like, you know, you set your clock by the Super Bowl and by the World Series and by March Madness basketball. Well, for a lot of us, we set our sort of annual clock by the Beacon. You know, it starts out and it's winter and it ends and it's spring, and it's just part of our rhythm. It's been 25 years that they've done this. The first one was in 1989. So it's very strange to think about it not happening. It's I don't know how else to describe it.
I wish they would come back through the Midwest one more time so I can see.
Yeah, I know, and a lot of people do. I get a lot of emails about that. Some people seem to think that you know, I control their schedule. I wish I did. I get a lot of emails and Facebook requests and stuff through my author page asking, you know, people saying, please ask them to come to St. Louis, ask them to come to Detroit, ask them to come to Red Rocks. You know, I think it would be great if they did that. It did something more outside of this region, but we'll see. You know, the more the better. The way I look at it, the more Allman Brothers, the better. The more releases, the more tours, it's all good.
Your book, One Way Out, is an oral history. You talk to all the people who were in the band and a huge number of people who've been around the band for all these years. Was there anything they said, I don't want to talk about that?
Well, not really. You know, surprisingly, especially when I came back around to writing this book as opposed to all the years of interviews, I think that at that point, you know, there's a certain sense that they want to get their story out there. They're happy for it to be documented. You know, there was a period in the mid '70s, the first time they broke up. It was on the heels of Greg Allman testifying in this drug trial in Macon, Georgia, that became a big ugly mess and was generally blamed for the collapse of the band. I do think that the band was under so much strain that they were going to fall apart anyhow. So I don't really think it was directly because of that, but it's an ugly period in the history, and Greg does not really like to talk about that. He's never explicitly said, don't ask me about this, but when we talk about it, it's a one area that he's never really wanted to go in depth about. The rest of the guys are more happy to talk about it and actually feel quite a bit of regret at this point.
There have been all sorts of stories through the years about deaths. We know that two members of the band died in motorcycle accidents in almost exactly the same place 1 year apart.
Yeah.
There have been murder charges. There have been all sorts of things. And then there was the story just a few weeks ago about this young woman who was working on a movie starring William Hurt as Greg Allman. It's called Midnight Rider. It's a biography of him. And they had just started production on the movie on February 20th when there was some sort of an accident or something. And now the movie's been shut down. Do you know about this? Can you fill us in?
You know, I really don't have any super special insight on that. It happened after my book was done. You know, it's a movie based on Greg Allman's memoir autobiography, My Cross to Bear. It was moving forward. I was happy to see it happening, although I'm always leery about, you know, movies being made about real life people who are alive. But, you know, I was impressed with the way it was moving. The casting seemed to be good. They had Charles Dutton, William Hurt, Tyson Ritter. And there was this horrible accident. You know, I only know really what I've read in Hollywood Reporter and Variety, like the rest of you. It doesn't seem good. Production's been shut down at this point, not permanently, but it seems to me highly unlikely to start again. The director was also the screenwriter and I believe the producer, and there's definitely going to be questions about liability and issues going forward. And I'm not sure if it's appropriate to restart it again or not. That's you know, sort of almost a moral decision in addition to a legal decision that I don't really feel qualified to make. But I do think, you know, there's something to this just sense of, oh, my God, that the tragedy and sadness and dark aura continues. It's very sad and obviously awful for this young woman's family.
How much do the guys who are still in the band now miss Dickie Betts, who was such a seminal part of the band and
honest, I don't think they miss him one iota.
really?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of fans miss him. I mean, there's a certain element of the band's sound that's not there. I think they've reformulated in a really brilliant way with Warren Haynes and Derek Trucks. I think that people love seeing them. I think they're putting on fantastic shows. But, you know, Dickie Betts' guitar and singing was a huge, huge part of the band. But when they parted ways with him in 2000, it was the end of a long period of cycles of drunkenness, violence, conflict. And I think when people read my book, they'll have a little bit of a better sense of where it was coming from, because it seemed to a casual fan to be sort of out of the blue, and it seemed, frankly, unimaginable that they could continue without him. It even seemed so to me. And they might not have been able to if Warren Haynes, who had left the band in 1997, had not decided to come back. But he's just such a strong player and such a strong presence and had so much legitimacy because he had put in all those years with Dickie. And so nobody could accuse them of just hiring a hack or something. I mean, Warren is a major talent. But, you know, the conflicts with Dickie were intense and severe. And I think that there's a much more serenity and peace in the Allman Brothers world now in the years without him.
When Dwayne Allman was still alive and he and Dickie were the co-lead guitarists of this band, what was the relationship like between those two?
Right. You know, that's a very interesting question and point that I tried very hard to get to. musically, I think the relationship was just wonderful, very, very close, very, very intimate, sharing the spotlight, sharing the stage, sharing ideas, prodding each other, making each other better. As Dickie said to me in the book, you know, it was the type of competition where no one loses. You just make each other better. I have the sense from everything I can gather and all the interviews I've done that they were extremely close personally. They didn't spend a ton of time hanging out away from the band. But having said that, in those first 3 years while Duane was alive, the band was almost always together anyhow. There was no downtime. In the early days in Macon, Georgia, they lived together. They toured 300 nights a year, first in a Ford Econoline van, then in a little Winnebago. So there was a ton of forced companionship, and I don't believe that there was ever any kind of violent altercations or tension between them. And what a lot of the guys said is that Duane was very good at dealing with Dickie. Dickie would have moods where he would get quiet and sullen and sort of withdrawn, and Duane would sort of go put his arm around him and say, "Hey, buddy, what's wrong? You know, let's go for a walk. Let's talk." And he was just very, very good at dealing with him. But in all the years without Duane, with Duane gone, nobody else had that kind of relationship with Dickie. Nobody else could handle him, and it just became more and more of an issue over the decades.
Wow.
I'm curious about the radio aspect of any rock band, because Dickie wrote Ramblin' Man, which was right. their biggest hit, and of course a lot of their stuff got played on what used to be called AOR, album oriented right. radio, now still gets played on some classic rock stations. Did they ever care about sitting down and writing a song saying let's try to have another hit, a top 40 hit?
Well, I don't think so. I think most of their greatest songs were not really written with that in mind. You know, Greg wrote Midnight Rider. Dickie wrote Ramblin' Man. I mean, heck, Ramblin' Man, they didn't even think they could record because it felt too country. I mean, they had originally decided they were going to record it as a demo for Dickie to send up to Nashville and try to get a country artist to record. They did in the 80s, after they had regrouped and they put together two records for Arista in 1980 and 81, and they did at that point really try to write hits, and the results were sort of a disaster. It's the only period in the band's long history that everybody involved with would just as soon forget or pretend never happened. So I think that when they tried to fit into prevailing trends, it was a bit of a fiasco. When they just followed their heart, their minds, their souls, it worked out a lot better, and that's when they produced all their best music.
Which do they consider more embarrassing, those years in the 80s, or Greg and Cher doing Allman and Woman?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question.
I can't not ask you about that, Alan.
The guys in the band were sort of rolling their eyes at Greg doing Allman and Woman, but I don't think they found it personally embarrassing because nobody else was involved, you know. I think that Greg always had a little bit of a Hollywood side, you know. Greg always had a bit of him there that really wanted to be a rock star, much more so than the other guys. So I think that when he was doing Allman and Woman and that stuff with Cher, it was almost like fulfilling the vision that the other guys had when they were making fun of them. You know, the way you sort of make fun of your buddies. Oh, there goes Hollywood doing his Hollywood thing.
Yeah.
So I don't think they feel personal embarrassment, and I'm not sure how Greg feels about that. That's another area. You asked before about things they don't want to talk about.
Yeah.
Greg and I have actually talked about that stuff at some length off the record during times when he was relaxed and comfortable in long interviews, but he never really wants to go on the record about it. He, as far as I can tell, has a very nice relationship with Cher. You know, they have a child together.
Yep.
And I've never heard anyone say anything bad about Cher involved in the Allman Brothers world. I think she's been a solid mother and, a fine person to deal with. So
it's not like she was ever going to be the Allman Brothers Yoko?
Oh.
Well, a lot of people say that. I mean, I've heard that very phrase used about her, but I don't really think it's fair. Again, like as I said about the drug trial, I think that the Allman Brothers at that point were a lot of strain. We're basically cracking and going to break up anyhow. So I think it just happened to coincide with Cher's involvement.
Yeah, I wasn't calling her that. I was just asking if anybody in the band felt that she was that.
Yeah. No, I don't think so. I really don't think the band thought that, other than they, you know, during that period, Greg was out in L.A. all the time. So his absence from Macon and from where the rest of the band was an issue. But Cher in particular, I don't think was at all.
To your knowledge, did she ever call Greg Sonny? I'm kidding.
Sonny. To my knowledge, no.
Oh, man.
I'm kidding.
How old is their kid now?
Oh, boy, don't put me on the spot like that. I have to tell you, I don't know. But he was born in about 1975 or 76.
38, 39?
Yeah.
Elijah Blue, yeah.
He could be as old as 39. I could look that up fast, quickly, but I believe he was actually born in 76, which I think would make him 37 or 38.
That's so hard to believe.
Yeah, that is very odd.
And of course, you know, that was the dawn of celebrity culture as we've come to know it, People Magazine. And, you know, I think what was damaging to Greg, I think, you know, Greg is such a great singer and songwriter. And I think his musical legacy is so strong. But in that era, he was really becoming better known just for being famous, for being a celebrity, for being married to Cher and whatnot. And I think that damaged his reputation to some extent that still stuck around him in a way that I don't think is entirely fair.
Right, let me get back to the music for a second then, because the heyday of the Allman Brothers, as far as I was concerned, kind of ended the first time around with the Brothers and Sisters album. Mm-hmm. And, of course, before that, they did Eat a Peach, and before that, they did their double live album at the Fillmore East.
Right.
That was not actually their first album. They did a couple of studio albums before that, but here was a band that, at that point, correct me if I'm wrong, Alan, these guys were not setting the world on fire, and all of a sudden the record company says, do a double live album. How did that happen?
Right. Well, what happened was, it's absolutely right, they put out their self-titled debut in 1969, and as Greg says to me in the book, it came out at number 186 with a bullet, with an anchor, I'm sorry, the opposite of a bullet. It fell off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
So they didn't really get discouraged, they just kept touring and touring, and they were getting more popular, you know, in their live shows. Then the next album came out, Idlewild South. It had In Memory of Elizabeth Reed on it. It had Midnight Rider, songs we now think of as classics. And it did a little bit better than the debut, but not much. You know, still basically, as Greg said again, we had two albums, Eat Dirt. You know, they had very colorful conversations with these guys.
Yeah.
So somebody said, well, gee, you know, what we need to do is put out a live album. We're a live band. We're killing it live. People love the shows. And so Phil Walden, who was the manager and the president of Capricorn Records, their record label, which presented all kinds of conflicts eventually, it led to lawsuits and everything else. But Phil had to fight with Atlantic Records, who was the distributed Capricorn, and said, look, guys, I know we have these two records that didn't do anything, but what we need to do now is put out a double live album with seven songs on it, and they're going to be 19 minutes and 17 minutes and 12 minutes. And, you know, Atlantic thought they were just out of their mind. But Phil, I think to his credit, stuck to his guns, and he won. Not only did they put out the double album, but they put it out people price, at the price of one, and bingo. It turned out to be just the right thing at the right time in 1971. You know, things were opening up for the radio, and boom, became a hit. And just as it was certified gold, Duane died. Yeah, so just, you know, tragic. They never got to really, you know, I'll probably upset some people with this reference, but, you know, Duane saw the promised land but never quite set foot in it, because he did see that the success was happening. He saw that the record was certified gold, and he told the guys, you know, Red Dog, the famous roadie, says in the book, you know, Duane was going around saying, no more beans for us, boy. Mm-hmm. It's going to be steak.
Yeah.
So he knew it was happening, he saw it happening, but he really didn't get to enjoy it. Right. And frankly, neither did the band, because just as the success that they had been working so hard for came, they were all sort of knocked on their bottoms by this incredible tragedy.
Well, if nothing else, that album that he worked on, not only produced legendary music, but also for about 20 years, every concert by every other band included somebody in the audience yelling out, "Whipping Post!"
That's right. That's right. And, you know, Frank Zappa played a pretty good version of Whipping Post. And, you know, from what I've always heard, is the way that happened is that people kept yelling Whipping Post. And so Zappa got kind of annoyed, and he worked it up with the band. He said, next time someone yells Whipping Post, let's do it.
Zappa was an incredible musician.
Yeah.
So was his son.
And his Whipping Post was good. You know, when he first played it, you know, people were wondering, is this some kind of joke? Is this like some meta criticism of the Allman Brothers? Is he making fun of them? And someone asked Zappa about it, and he said, "No, it's not a joke. There's a great band and a great song, and I wanted to play it."
when is Warren and Derek say that they're going to leave?
Well, at the end of this year. Haven't announced exactly what's going to happen in the fall. And I guess to some extent it'll end up depending on what the rest of the band decides to do, if they decide to continue. I think Warren has a vision. He always likes to do things big, and I think he's got a little bit of a vision of finishing with some kind of grand concert that they would announce at some point this summer. So we shall see. You know, I think there's a good chance it will be in my part of the world, not your part of the world.
Yeah, I've seen Warren a couple times with Government Mule and the Warren Haynes Band. And I love Warren Haynes. And then Derek Trucks. I love Derek Trucks. And does his wife, Susan Tedeschi, ever get up and play with them at all?
Yeah, she has. I've seen Susan play with them quite a few times. At the first two shows at the Beacon last weekend, I saw Susan there with their two kids. But she did not get up and play. They didn't have any guests, which was just, you know, having lots of guests pop up at the Beacon has become a bit of a tradition. But I kind of like when they stay old school and keep the core band there. Although someone like Susan, keeping it in the family is always a good thing, because the band did start with two brothers, and Derek Trucks is the nephew of Butch Trucks, the founding drummer.
Yep.
So there's something kind of beautiful to me anytime a brother gets up and plays, or a wife, or a cousin, or any relative. It's all good. The Allman Brothers, if it's a relative, get it up there.
Yeah, she's damn talented, too.
Susan
and guitarist.
She's great. She's a great singer, a great presence, and the Tedeschi Truck Band is a great band, and you know, I think that's really the heart of why Derek and Warren have decided to do this. You know, they want to focus on their bands, the bands we're just talking about, Tedeschi Trucks Band, Government Mule, Warren Haynes Band. Each of them has kids. You know, Warren has a 2.5-year-old son now. Derek and Susan have two children. So I think they feel like, it's like the rest of us are struggling with the work-life balance. You know, they have their own bands they really want to promote, and then they want to spend the time they're not doing that with their families.
The book is called One Way Out, The Inside History of the Allman Brothers Band. We have today touched on approximately 7% of what Alan Paul has written about this band, because it's an amazing more than four-decade history. And congratulations on that, and enjoy the rest of the shows. And thanks so much for coming on here today.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. It's great talking to you guys.
Alan Paul, the book is called One Way Out. So this is the Big 550 KTRS. Meet me.
Let's look at traffic right now. Here's Tim Weiland.
And thank you for asking about Dickie Betts. I've always wanted to know that. Yeah. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
All right. They're working with a couple crashes now. You've got one on northbound 55 at Park that's blocking the right center lane, and traffic now is backed up approaching Graboy. They're just clearing an accident on the ramp from southbound 367 to westbound 270. They're saying it's totally clear, but on the camera it looks like they've still got some emergency vehicles there. Also, on the eastbound 270 before Lindbergh, you've got an accident blocking the left lane. We've got an accident on westbound 44 near Lindbergh they've just moved that off to the right shoulder. It was blocking a right lane. We have heavy traffic on southbound 170 from just south of Olive down through Highway 40. Westbound 40, you've got that slow stretch between Kings Highway and McCausland, now from Clarkson to the Boone Bridge. And eastbound 40, you're slowing a little bit around 141 through Mason, and then from Jefferson to the Poplar Street Bridge. This traffic report brought to you by Applebee's. Applebee's has a theory about lunch. After their new lunch combos featuring the artisan grilled chicken ciabatta sandwich go down, productivity goes up. See you tomorrow. From the Golden Oak Lending Traffic Center, Tim Weiland on the Big 550 KTRS.
Beef before the storm, during the storm, and after the storm. Turn to KTRS for the latest weather updates, road conditions, and school closings. The Big 550 KTRS. Depend on it.
I will never forget the day my son Jeremy told me he hated me and slammed the door in my face. I'm behavioral therapist Janet Lehman. Behavior problems can turn the child you love and your life into a nightmare. That's why my husband James and I created the Total Transformation, the step-by-step program that shows you how to fix the worst behavior problems and get your child to respect and listen to you again. No matter what the behavior, defiance, backtalk, angry outbursts, disrespect, we can help you stop it. Now you can get the Total Transformation for free. All you need to do is get the program and let us know how it works for you. You can keep it forever for free.
Limited number of free programs available. Call now. 1-800-642-8896. 1-800-642-8896. That's 1-800-642-8896. 1-800-642-8896.
How long have you been suffering with your sinus problem? Dr. Karen Boone and Metro Sinus can help. You see, Dr. Karen Boone and her partner are the region's first certified and most experienced in a new procedure called balloon sinuplasty. Now, it sounds worse than it is. In fact, it's a very simple procedure, minimal downtime. It restores the normal sinus function by permanently enlarging the drainage pathways of your sinuses. So within 24 to 48 hours, you are back up on your feet and your sinus problems are gone for good. Dr. Karen Boone is the most experienced and the first certified, along with her partner, MetroSinus.com. It's not a one-size-fits-all. Dr. Karen Boone can help you either way, but maybe you're a perfect candidate for in-office balloon sinuplasty. 636-685-8040. It's covered with Medicare and most major insurance carriers. MetroSinus.com or 636-685-8040. Dr. Karen Boone can fix your sinus problems for good. MetroSinus.com.
Have you paid for an appraisal up front only to be turned down because your house didn't appraise out? At Golden Oak Lending, we take the risk for you. This is Bob Ellman. If your loan doesn't close, you don't pay anything, including the appraisal. Check out our A-plus rating with the BBB. We've been right here for 14 years in St. Louis. Why would you refinance with anyone else?
Home values have been steadily increasing, and with today's mortgage rates in the threes, you can refinance to a lower monthly payment or get cash out to pay off credit cards. Our licensed loan officers are trained to find you the best mortgage plan for your situation, and you pay nothing out of pocket.
Apply today. If your loan doesn't close, pay nothing for the appraisal.
Call 314-567-GOLD. That's 567-4653.
Golden Oak Lending, short my blues.
Rates are down to 3.375 fixed. 15-year APR, 3.807. NMLS 1149-37, 111 Westport Plaza, St. Louis, Missouri. Call 567-GOLD.
Wait a miss! The Cardinals are world champions for 2006.
The Cardinals are world champs in 2011.
There's nothing better than celebrating championships in St. Louis. Fans, this is Adam Wainwright, and we're offering ring promotions this year. There's the 1964, 2004, and 2013 ring giveaways. Get your tickets through promotional packs or with individual tickets. Visit cardinals.com/promotions.
And they mob Wainwright as he goes the distance tonight.
Are you thinking about coming to a lot of Cardinal games this season, but reconsidering because you don't have anything to wear? Well, stop. We have you covered. On a handful of weekend games this season, the Cardinals are giving away replica jerseys. Get tickets to all six games, plus four more through our promotional pack, or buy them as an individual game. Tickets are on sale now. Visit Cardinals.com for more information.
The following is a free offer from Rosetta Stone.
Anyone that I talk to about learning a language, I tell them there's just no other way to do it than Rosetta Stone.
I took Spanish in high school, and it was a miserable failure. 20 years later, I saw the Rosetta Stone program, and it was pretty fun.
You are seeing the language, you are writing the language, you are speaking it.
Real users agree. Rosetta Stone is the fastest way to learn a language, guaranteed. And to prove it, we want you to be a part of our biggest language learning event in history. Because this year, we want to help 3 million people learn a new language. That's why we're going to give you an absolutely free demo of our language immersion technology. To participate in this nationwide event, call 1-800-600-1356.
Rosetta Stone is, in my opinion, the ultimate method, the only method there is to learn a language.
For your free demo, call 1-800-600-1356. That's 1-800-600-1356.
I'm Larry Connors. You know, for almost 40 years, I've been in St. Louis, building credibility and trust. Of course, no one just gives you trust. You have to earn it every day. That's what John Beal's family has done for 65 years. A roofing company doesn't stay around long unless it does the customers right. So I'm proud to represent the John Beal family, and when you need help with your roof, call John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
You need a website. Why not do it yourself? You know your business. With Wix.com, you can create a professional website all by yourself. It's easy and free. With Wix.com, you don't need to be a programmer. Just use the intuitive drag-and-drop website builder. There's no limit to how creative you can be. It's your website, your style. Show the world what you can do. Create your own stunning website today. Go to Wix.com. It's easy and free.
Bosch is the quietest dishwasher brand in the U.S. and now features a third rack. See it at Best Buy today or visit BestBuy.com/Bosch.
Hi, Frank Opinion. How are you? Let's talk about Matheny Heating and Cooling. Let's talk about the fact that they service all of St. Louis and almost all of St. Charles County. What I mean by that is there are certain parts of St. Charles County, well, actually one part, the extreme western portion of St. Charles County. They don't go quite that far. About 90-95% of St. Charles County, all of St. Louis County, and sorry, Illinois, not yet. 71 years. What a reputation. And everything you want in a heating and cooling company, and I'll tell you exactly what you want. You want somebody coming to your house who knows how to work on the equipment you have, who's up to speed, trained on that particular heating and cooling unit. You want somebody who's courteous, who is aware of the fact that they're in someone else's home, and they act like it and treat it the way they treat their own home, and you want competitive pricing. You don't expect it for free. It's not a charity, but you don't want to find out that, one, you paid too much for the service, or that you paid for something you didn't really need. It's exactly what's going to happen with Matheny. You're going to get what you need and nothing more, and the price is going to be fair, and the people are going to be courteous, and you'll never need to think of calling anybody else again. Matheny Heating and Cooling. 71 years they've been doing what they do so well. MatheneyHeatingandCooling.com.
Dan's actually playing along. He's playing air bass with this. We had such a good time talking to Alan Paul about his Allman Brothers book. Whipping Post! Well, okay, there it is. There it is. Have you ever, in all the years you've been playing with various bands, have you ever had somebody done that on a show and you started playing the bass line?
One time.
Yeah?
Yeah. They just yelled Whipping Post, but the band I was in didn't do it at the time. But I started playing it. I knew it. I knew what it was. Come on, join in!
Do you have an Allman Brothers story?
I do have an Allman Brothers story, and this stems back probably over 30 years, I guess. Probably around 1977 to 78, okay. Somewhere in there.
That's about the same era as my Allman Brothers story.
Yeah, we had a family friend and in St. Louis, and he would cater. He had a restaurant, and he would cater a lot of the concerts and stuff. So he got to be friends with a lot of the stars and the artists and everything. So they had planned on, and they had a bunch of people that worked at his restaurant and just a bunch of friends and everything, and said that they were renting out a hockey rink, and they were going to have a big midnight skate, and everybody was going to play hockey or do whatever they wanted to do. But they were renting out the rink for a couple hours, and the rink was rented out from like midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning till 2 or 3. So I went down because I was I had played hockey, but I stopped playing hockey. But I was just playing pickup hockey here and there, and I went down there, and the house is just full of people. And one of the guys comes up and he goes, "Did you see who's in the other room?" And I said, "No." And he goes, "Walk in there." He goes, Greg Allman sitting on the couch.
What? And
Greg Allman was sitting on the couch. He was supposed to go play hockey with us.
Really?
Yeah.
Greg Allman was going to play hockey with you?
I don't know if he was going to play hockey or not, but he did. He ended up not playing, but I don't think he was in any shape to play.
Uh-huh.
Because he's sitting on the couch, just kind of, you know, lounged on the couch.
Yeah.
Looking up. His eyes are pretty glassy.
Yeah.
And kind of slit a little bit, and mm-hmm. I said, Greg Allman, it's nice to meet you. And I just said, my name's Dan. And he just reached up and shook my hand, and it was kind of a
fishy, you know, hand.
Yes. And he says, hey, how you doing? Nice to meet you. One of those deals. It's like, all right, great, I just met Greg Allman. And I think he was stoned.
You think? Yeah. I'm pretty sure has put so many pharmaceuticals of one kind or another in his body that if he were to quit, and maybe he has quit, that they're, you know, even on his death day, would do the autopsy and go, well, he's still got stuff in his system.
Oh, yeah.
He's still
stoned.
Yeah. I interviewed him once when there was, during one of those weird times when he had a solo album out. The band wasn't touring, and he had done a solo album. And I said, do you ever want to be anything besides a rock star? He said, oh, yeah, I wanted to be a dentist. And I was like, if you would ask me to name 100 professions that Greg Allman would say, yes, I wanted to be a
dentist.
I would never have guessed dentist.
Well, maybe access to that laughing gas.
No, he wanted to be a dentist, and he told me he really wanted to be an oral surgeon. He had actually started going to school for that, but he didn't have the money, and so his band started playing, and he was supposed to get the money together from that to continue going to dental school or pre-med or whatever it was, pre-dental. And he said, you know what, I'm having too much fun with this. Plus, women are much more attracted to rock stars than the dentists.
Oh, yeah.
All right, we're going to take out that little molar. Open wide, dude.
You don't have many people going to a rock show and yelling out, bicuspid! That doesn't happen. All right, we've got to take a break here, and then Bill Cleveland will join us. And then next hour, of course, the Harris Challenge and Knuckleheads in the News. Yes, we've taken the Friday edition, moved it to a Thursday, and left tomorrow's Friday edition in place. We'll have all the regular stuff then, along with Joe Hipperson on movies, here on the Big 550 KTRS.
Meet me.
All right, let's get a look at traffic now. Tim Weiland?
I get a kick out of Paul saying you're playing the air guitar with the music. Hey, I've seen you play in the band. What's the difference? No, I know. Dan's a good bass player.
Yes, he is. He's the best bass player on this show.
Yeah, he is.
Thanks, guys.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I've seen that. It's hey, on eastbound 270 before Lindbergh, or at Lindbergh, you've got a stall that's blocking the left lane. Now they're saying before McDonald, you've got a multi-vehicle accident that has the two left lanes blocked. I could see traffic backed up all the way approaching Highway 370. They've cleared that accident southbound 367 to westbound 270, but they also have an accident now. It is on westbound Highway 40 near the Spirit of St. Louis overpass, and that's blocking two lanes. You're jammed up solid back to about Timberlake Manor. And then they've cleared the accident northbound 55 at Park, and we still have slow traffic southbound 170 between Page and Highway 40. Eastbound hockey traffic starting to come in. You're slowing Timberlake Manor through Mason. You're going to be slow again from McKnight through Big Bend. And this traffic report brought to you by SSM Cardinal Glennon Children's Medical Center. SSM Cardinal Glennon's pediatric cardiology team with the top two heart surgeons in the region. Having the best. Another way their love for kids just keeps on growing at SSM Cardinal Glennon Children's Medical Center. From the Golden Oak Lending Traffic Center, Tim Weiland on the Big 550 KTRS.
Hi, this is John Shea, Mr. Fix-It, with some good news for our listeners. How many of you listening have an old TV or bulky entertainment center taking up valuable space in your home? Well, then you need to call Pitchett at 314-932-1100 and take advantage of their excellent service, as many of our listeners have. Pitchett provides a residential commercial junk removal service with very affordable rates. Their friendly staff at Pitchett will arrive at your location, remove your unwanted items, and you don't even have to lift a finger. They'll remove the item from your basement, your attic, anywhere they're located, and then clean up after themselves.
themselves. Pitching will provide free estimates. They'll visit your location on your schedule, not theirs, and provide you with a quote on the spot. Pitchit is an eco-friendly recycling most items within reason, and of course they are fully insured. So give them a call at 314-932-1100. That's 314-932-1100. Or visit their website at pitchitandforgetit.com. That's pitchitandforgetit.com. Senior discount supply.
Hi, everybody. Kerry Hall here. On Saturday, March 22nd, I'm hosting home buying and selling seminars. The buyers are at 10, the sellers are at noon. Learn how to save thousands, and I mean thousands, when buying or selling a home. Seating is limited to 20. Call 878-2300. That's 878-2300 for your reservation. So join me, Kerry Hall, on Saturday, March 22nd, for my home buying and selling seminars. You'll be amazed at what you learn. Call 878-2300. That's 878-2300. And listen to This Week in Real Estate 1 to 3 on Sundays right here on the Big 550 KTRS.
How old are your smoke alarms? Replace them today with Kidde worry-free alarms. Get 10 years of power and no low battery chirps. Kidde, technology that saves lives.
Live from downtown St. Louis, it's the Bill Cleveland segment, starring Bill Cleveland, along with Bruce Limpress and the All Boy Orchestra, brought to you by Laclede Cab, your AM and the PM cab company, 314-652-3456, and get their STL Taxi app for your smartphone. And now, here's Bill Cleveland.
Hello, Bill.
Hello, and good afternoon, everybody. Well, a man named Dallas Stevie won his second Iditarod in 8 days, 13 hours, 4 minutes, and 19 seconds. Put that in perspective, it's the exact length of time it takes to play the final 2 minutes of any college basketball game. And according to a study, you've got a 1 in 5 chance of achieving your childhood career ambitions, which probably explains why you don't run into too many cowboys, princesses, or space rangers. This whole missing airliner thing is just incredibly bizarre. Nobody can seem to explain what really happened to the thing. 1 minute it's flying high, and the next minute it's never heard from again. You know, it's like MC Hammer.
Hey! Yeah.
Finally, this afternoon, Chinese officials thought they were getting close and said their satellite images had found what appeared to be a large white object in the middle of the ocean that could have been that missing plane. Turns out, sadly, it was just Rosie O'Donnell swimming.
Oh.
Bill Cleveland, 7 brought to you this afternoon by Laclede Cab, and I am Bill Cleveland on Big 550 KTRS.
Why would she swim with reflective material on? It's a puzzle is what it is. Thanks, Bill. Talk to you tomorrow. By the way, I just got word about this. I'm very proud to announce a major radio trade journal has today named me one of America's radio hosts. Thank
wow.
you.
Wow.
Thank you very, very
That's
much.
Awesome.
It's quite an honor, and I'm so proud to be included in such great company. It's 5 o'clock. This is the Big 550 KTRS St. Louis.
From ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. President Obama saying,